Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, the political side of us got excited over the weekend for a number of reasons. We just, you know, love the horse races in addition to all the policy debates that go on. But while most people aren't ready for 2014, we always get excited when we see potential open seats. And that's what we got over the weekend in a couple of states. On Friday, we learned that two-term Republican Senator Saxby Chambliss would not be running for re-election. But the good news there, as you pointed out in the jolt on Friday, Jim, is that right now it looks very, very likely that Republicans will hold that seat and probably hold it pretty easily. The more intriguing news was on Saturday when longtime Democrat Tom Harkin of Iowa, first elected in 1984, announced he would not be seeking a sixth term. He was pretty much unbeatable in Iowa, and while it'd still be a tough race, Republicans, I think, do have a shot here. There's a couple of congressmen that'll be interested. Who knows if maybe Terry Branstad, the governor, would do that instead of running for another term as governor. Who knows? But it's certainly there's a much better chance of the Republicans picking up the Iowa seat than Democrats picking up the Georgia seat.
That is the case, that it's not the highest bar to clear, of course. Now, it's worth noting to listeners that we're talking about a set of circumstances that is not quite totally unprecedented, but we have not seen in a very long time. Basically, the last time Iowa had an open seat Senate race like this was 1974. So if you are my age or younger, you've never seen this type of circumstance before. They've had Chuck Grassley or Tom Harkin for decade after decade. The names that are being floated around, the Democrats are very high on a guy by the name of Bruce Braley, who's basically, if you're in the House of Representatives from Iowa right now, you're under consideration for this seat. Basically, sure. You're being mentioned. Bruce Braley is a Democrat. Two members of the House who are Republicans being mentioned, Tom Latham and Steve King. Stephen King is probably the more known of them, and not the novelist Stephen King, obviously. Right. Steve King is a longtime, you know, staunch conservative, true Tea Party type. He was one of those guys who every conservative wanted to get the endorsement of in the Iowa caucuses. Occasionally dabbles in what might be seen as a semi-birther-esque commentary or something. I think a lot of folks feel that Steve King, who represents his district very well, won a sixth term, might be tougher to sell statewide. Latham won a seat which is slightly less heavily Republican and beat out Representative Leonard Boswell because of redistricting. They were put in the same seat. This is while Obama was winning Iowa fairly handily in 2012. So like a lot of these circumstances, kind of like in Kentucky, you had a longtime incumbent Democrat who was going to be really tough to beat under normal circumstances. Now you have an open seat. The state is not necessarily ideal for Republicans, but it is a it's now a competitive race, and you see what happens. If nothing else for Democrats, this, you know, broadens the battlefield and puts them in one more spot where they're going to have to defend a seat that they previously held. So reasons for optimism for Republicans in Iowa. We'll have to see how this race shapes up, who decides to run, and what the contours of the race look like.
As you mentioned, the Democrats have to play a lot more defense. They're already defending a lot more seats than Republicans, thanks to their pretty big wins in 2008. This is a seat they would have won pretty handily without much challenge from the Republicans had Harkin decided to run again. So hope springs eternal, and hopefully the Republicans pick the most electable and conservative nominee to follow the Buckley rule, as we like to say around here. All right, on to martini number two now, Jim. And, of course, the president laid out his laundry list of policy preferences in his inaugural address. We'll probably hear more about it in the State of the Union address. But right now we're seeing a major push on immigration reform. We're seeing this group of eight senators. They're not calling it a gang, so that gives me a little bit of relief. But when you look at the senators involved in this thing, it does make me a little bit nervous. The four Democrats here are Schumer, Durbin, Menendez, and Bennett of Colorado. And the Republicans are McCain, Graham, Rubio, and Flake. And on this issue, I only trust two of those eight, Rubio and Flake, so far, particularly Flake. But basically, the idea is this. There's four major bullet points. Creating a path to citizenship for illegals contingent upon securing the border and better tracking of people here on visas. Two, reforming the legal immigration system, including awarding green cards to immigrants who obtain advanced degrees in science and so forth. Creating an effective employment verification system, E-Verify for short there, and allowing more low-skill workers into the country and allowing employers to hire them if they can demonstrate they couldn't recruit a U.S. citizen, and that's like agricultural workers and so forth. And Jim, we'll see how this plays out and how some of the more conservative members of this coalition present this bill. But we've seen this dance before. We saw it with Reagan in 1986. You get all the giveaways to the illegals, but somehow border security always gets lost in the mix.
Yeah, this is the reason this is the bad martini is not that this is not an issue that I think shouldn't be addressed. I just have this bad feeling that it's just going to come out, not going to turn out well for us. This weekend at the National Review Institute Summit, I had the joy of moderating a debate between Mark Krikorian of the Center for Immigration Studies, I think probably one of the most eloquent and passionate of the restrictionists who really knows this issue backwards and forwards, and Hugh Hewitt, nationally syndicated radio talk show host, who basically said everything Mark said is wrong. Thankfully, it was a very good-natured debate, but very, you know, two very strong disagreements, viewpoints there. A lot of the cliches are very, you know, you have 11 million people here who are here illegally. What do you do with them? You can't really round them up, you know, or you know, it's going to take forever to round them up. And wouldn't it be inhumane? And you know, you cite the teenagers who are in the categories of the Dream Act, the American Success Stories, yada, yada. There are a lot of ways this issue can go wrong for Republicans. Ideally, you would end up with something that would indeed give people a sense that the border is secure. I've always subscribed to the theory that once people felt like the problem was not getting worse, they would look at the people who are here illegally differently, that they would not continue to see this as this massive national security threat of having open borders and anybody who wants to come in, including drug cartels and gangbangers and all that group. Also worth noting, kind of surprised to learn this, that apparently of the 11 million estimated illegal immigrants who are in the country right now, 40% of them entered the country legally and then overstayed their visas, a figure which I found stunning. And then everyone has said, well, okay, we need a way to track when you've overstayed your visa, and then you get tracked down, and then they, you know, toss you out of the country. Well, apparently, according to Krikorian, they were supposed to have this 17 years ago, passed into law by Congress, and lo and behold, the federal government hasn't set it up. And one of the big issues here is not a question of what laws do we have on the books, the question of what laws do we enforce, and how does the government go about enforcing them? You can have all the laws in the books you want, but if the government doesn't actually enforce them, then it might as well not be there. We know this issue is going to get demagogued to high heaven. One of the issues I put to Hugh was noting that Rick Perry, Texas governor, whose whole public persona is based on this, I am one tough hombre who does not full of, you know, gooey, sentimental, soft, lefty thoughts in him. During the presidential debate, said, you know, when he's talking about giving in-state tuition to the children of illegal immigrants, he said, well, if you don't agree with me on this, you don't have a heart. I don't want to hear from Rick Perry that I don't have a heart, okay? I mean, Rick Perry's whole policy proposals are on not being heartful and kind and gooey and all that stuff. So when even Rick Perry feels the right to play the compassion card and kind of infer that people who disagree with him aren't compassionate and don't care about these people, I think it says something about how toxic this discussion has gotten, that one side automatically goes to the I'm a caring person and you're not one. And I think we're going to hear a lot about this in the coming weeks, and I hope that we can get past this, you know, emotional anecdote form of the policy and actually look at what the policy changes would do, but I'm not terribly optimistic, which is why this long rant will wrap up my take on why this is the bad martini.
Jim, you know who had a pretty good policy and approach on this was Primary Mitt. Mitt was the guy who said that, you know, the best way to solve this problem is to make it life pretty much miserable for people who are here illegal, dry up their employment opportunities through E-Verify and other systems, strengthen the border. And at that point, the incentive for people to break the law to come here or even finding work after staying here illegally would pretty much dry up. On to martini number three now. And Paul Ryan, the vice presidential nominee, Mitt Romney's running mate, was well seen in public this past weekend. He addressed the National Review Institute Summit. He was on Meet the Press with David Gregory. He talked in both areas about the need for, you know, Republicans to be unified in stopping the worst parts of the second term Obama agenda. He talked about the need for fiscal sanity. But then on the Meet the Press interview, Jim, there was this kind of odd exchange. David Gregory simply showed a piece of footage from the reception following the inauguration where Paul Ryan walked up and chatted briefly with Bill and Hillary Clinton. And then Paul Ryan did explain what they were talking about, but then offered some unsolicited insights that I think caught a lot of people on the right off guard. Here's what happened.
What were they talking about? Any advice there coming from the president?
We were talking about personal health. Both of us lost our dads when we were young, and we were just talking. I got concussions when I was young, and Hillary was telling me about hers, and we were just kind of chumming it up. Look, if we had a Clinton presidency, if we had Erskine Bowles, chief staff of the White House, or president of the United States, I think we would have fixed this fiscal mess by now. That's not the kind of presidency we're dealing with right now.
Now, Jim, you and I have speculated as to whether Hillary Clinton's going to run or not, but heading into the next election cycle, saying that the woman who certainly would be the front runner if she decides to run would have solved the nation's massive debt crisis is not exactly the way to boost the Republican brand.
Yeah, I think I know what he's trying to get at here. And obviously, look, anytime, you know, you can do what you can to exacerbate whatever tensions remain between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama is a good one. At the same time, there's a certain argument that we on the right maybe should it's time to rethink how much effort we put into attempting to define Barack Obama, because he's defined. People know what they think of him. He's been put forth for election and he's won re-election. So you can argue about the kind of person, the kind of president Barack Obama is for a really long time, but I don't know if it's necessarily going to persuade anyone anymore. Hillary, on the other hand, Hillary is, you know, allegedly going to be running in 2016. I remain a skeptic of that, but I don't know if it's really such a good idea to be touting how she could have done a better job, considering how she may very well be the next Democratic nominee. And oh, by the way, won't it be challenging for Paul Ryan if he turns out to be the Republican nominee in 2016? And he's just, you know, offered this soundbite of how great she would have been at fixing the economy. I think I know the point he was getting at. I just think it came out in a rather awkward way. And, you know, it just is one of those things where you can just simply say, look, we should have had the economy fixed by now. We can very easily say 7.8% unemployment is totally unacceptable. We're going to get new GDP numbers this week. And some people are saying, you know, 1.5%, some miserable number there. We can say all of that stuff. I really don't think it does us that much good to say, oh, boy, wouldn't Hillary have been terrific in this job.
And Jim, if Hillary had had the Congress Obama had his first 2 years, much like Bill had his first 2 years as president, I honestly don't think it would have been much different. I think she probably would have tacked more to the center heading into re-election. After if the midterms had gone as badly for her as they went for Obama, but I don't see her taking a drastically different course given the conditions on the field in 2009, do you?
That is correct. And what's more, to the extent anybody on the right looked at the Hillary versus Obama choice and preferred Hillary, it was mostly over foreign policy, that she seemed a little bit tougher, a little bit more hawkish, a little bit less of the kumbaya type stuff. Economically, I didn't see a huge difference between Hillary and Obama. And the idea that, oh, if she'd been in charge, you know, we still would have had a stimulus and it still would have spent the money pretty much the same way. Before there was Obamacare, there was Hillary Care. The idea that we wouldn't have seen some massive new regulatory effort on health care seems pretty likely. I can't see, you know, a Hillary presidency being that different from what Obama's would have been, at least in the domestic sphere. And I don't think it does us much good to start saying, oh, if only we'd had Hillary, you know.
Yes.
I think that's a bad sentiment to develop in the electorate over the next 4 years.
Jim, interesting start to the week. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.